Coming up on Patriots This Week, football is often called a game of inches, but when the Patriots play the Seahawks, it always comes down to 1 yard.
And the ball lands incomplete. Seattle will win it.
We just couldn't quite make enough plays.
This was a Super Bowl rematch that exceeded the hype. Seattle came to Foxborough and delivered a shot for the ages.
You hit me fair and square. It's football.
Now it's on to San Francisco. Can anyone say trap game?
You know, when you come off a loss, you just got a bad taste in your mouth. You wanna play well.
That's right now on Patriots This Week.
Another primetime showdown of the Patriots and the Seahawks, and once again it comes down to a goal to go. But unlike in Super Bowl 49, this time the Patriots were turned aside by Seattle as the Seahawks win a nail-biter. Hi everyone, welcome to Patriots This Week. Bob Soucy along with my radio partner from 98.5 The Sports Hub, former Pats quarterback Scott Zolak, and a three-time Super Bowl champion in Matt Chatham. Malcolm Butler rescued the day in Super Bowl 49, guys, but the other night, Sunday night, Patriots-Seahawks, it was the Seattle defense with a goal line stand. Pats had it first and goal to go from the two. Take us through that final sequence. So.
Well, I think they really wanted to kill some of the time there. You know, Russell Wilson and the Seattle offense was really moving the ball really well in that game. So I think they really tried to set it up with a little bit of a sneak, take about 20 seconds off the clock, and eventually get to LeGarrette Blount. But I thought Chancellor made a heck of a play coming from the right side to get Blount when he was going over the top. Tom dropped the snap. Next thing you know, we're going out to Gronkowski on fourth down, and we didn't get the call.
The one thing we always do here is, you know, we credit Brady and this offense for really sort of being the chess team, right? The team that you make a move, they make the corresponding move that's the right one. I thought the one thing in that sequence that was not good and not Patriot-like is that when they got the motion out to remove the guy from the box, they actually pinched the tackles and then snuck into the pinch. So it's sort of they got the corresponding move, and then my thought then is to then go off tackle. It's like they go tight, you don't go tight as well, you go wide. So I thought it was an error. I thought throughout the game, not being at that sort of that situational excellence that we're used to seeing them, that was probably what ended up sort of deciding this thing.
The Seahawks had just been penalized for a 12th defender on the field, so that moved the ball from the two to the one. Yeah. That's when the Pats subbed out their lighter personnel for the heavier personnel. In that situation, they went with a fade to Gronkowski. What are the advantages of trying to execute that play? I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about it, but in this case, is it simply a matter of getting your guy one-on-one against a defender?
Well, first of all, at 6'7", he's very hard to defend. And I think it's one of the hardest passes to throw in football. You're basically taking one step as a quarterback, throwing before you know if he could get up on a guy. I thought Chancellor grabbed him, but he didn't really get a chance to get the hands up. It's a tough throw for Brady. He's got to get a good look at it. So if Chancellor was off like he was, takes too much time to get to him. You really want to almost throw a quick out right there.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of fades at that point. I mean, you're 1 yard away. I mean, think of all the things in all of your sort of back pocket their football plays. The fade is a 50-50 proposition.
If they're not bump and run, that's a tough throw.
Well, and again, it'd be one thing if you got them to motion out of the backfield with Gronk and you caught a small linebacker or something. You caught a tall safety, so he's going to be pretty competent in that situation. So I just don't like the call. I think slants, we've seen Gronk shake a guy and just put that big 6'7 body between him and the defender. That's a great call. Any kind of pick element is Zoe alluded to that you could use on the edge, some way of getting someone free or use Blount. I mean, I just think there are so many better options than that. They took a chance, just didn't work out.
And so you mentioned at the start of that sequence when Brady did the sneak from the two that the Patriots were trying to walk that fine line between working the clock and getting it in the end zone to set up Gostkowski for the tie. He never had that chance. How leery were they of the Seattle offense because of what took place late in the second quarter when the Seahawks scored in less than a minute?
Well, that's fresh in their mind. You get two big plays down the field right there. You're basically kicking a field goal with a pretty darn good field goal kicker. They feared the zone coverage, and I think they were forced to play zone. I heard Gerard Mayo talk about it this week. You know, when you have a running quarterback, you can't play a ton of man. You lose your lanes, you turn your back to the quarterback, and that guy can pick up 20 yards with his legs.
Yeah, this is how it works. I mean, if you were to sort of list on a piece of paper all the things that a team does that would kick you out of zone, if they use a lot of bunch formations, because the reason they get in those bunches is to sort of disperse and make you pick one another off. If they use stacked wide receivers and these pick routes, if they're going to do pick, the last thing you want to do is be chasing because it makes you get picked. If they have a mobile quarterback, to his idea with Gerard, this is all linebackers know this, the last thing you want to do is be chasing your guy with your back to him. So all the things that make you not want to play play man-to-man, that's Seattle. So you need to play zone. So it's not a question of zone versus man. It's playing zone better. It's playing it more physical. It's having sort of better reaction when the exchanges happen.
And along those lines, why did Seattle have so much success with the empty formations? They picked up 5 third downs out of empty sets, and they had a lot of success, of course, with C.J. Procise, a former wide receiver at Notre Dame, now running back for the Seahawks.
Yeah, he surprised me. Their receivers are better than they get credit for. I like Curse a lot. Baldwin reminds me of Steve Smith Sr. We talked about that on the broadcast. He just competes every single play. 3 touchdowns, he killed him.
I just simply, when you go back and look at the plays that hurt them, I think you can come up with a play deck of somewhere between 12 and 15 plays. And the most common theme for me was just guys not executing the call. I'd call it 10-man defense. It's sort of, the call's not the problem. And this is sort of an old adage that Belichick would often say to us. He's like, how can you tell me it was the wrong call if you didn't play the call that I called correctly, right? I mean, if it was run correctly, well, then it was the right call. I mean, you can look to sort of the drive before halftime, the one where, Malcolm Butler's 12, 15 yards off on the route. The call does not dictate to do that. It's not the call. It's not the scheme. It's just executing what's out there.
And you also have to give credit to Seattle. I mean, Russell Wilson was fantastic in that game from the very first pass completion to lock it down the sideline. Coleman, it seemed, had good coverage on that play, but a perfect throw, and that was really the story for much of the night.
I thought Russ Wilson and Tom Brady both had really good throws on the fade routes. 2 to Edelman. Procise, though, that's the one that killed him. It's the matchup problem. He's in the slot. You got a linebacker on him. Perfect. It's the way you draw it up, and I thought Bevel called a great game.
I think one of the things you look at that would almost be promising is that a lot of the guys I mentioned that made mistakes are really good players. These are guys that they generally rely upon. And you can go through those plays. It's not some guy that's not good enough. It's not some personnel. It's, some of the guys that you've seen make plays that we're breaking down.
Now, we're holding our breath as we speak because we don't know Rob Gronkowski's short-term status, much less his long-term status for this team. Took a hard hit from Earl Thomas during the course of the game, knocked out for a while, came back amidst conflicting reports in the aftermath. But certainly for Gronk to finish the game the way he did, he engendered a lot of respect, including Earl Thomas's.
Well, I think he's tough, and I'm glad Earl Thomas didn't hit him low. T.J. Ward, what would he do? He'd try and hit him in the knee. I thought that was a clean hit. He didn't hit the head. He didn't take out the knee. Hit him right where you should, right between the 8 and the 7. The best thing you have right now is Martellus Bennett. So the fact that you got Gronkowski, you could rest him a week, regardless of what the report is, Martellus Bennett's played well enough to go out to San Francisco and win.
I still don't think we've seen sort of a wire-to-wire 12 personnel, the idea of 2 tight ends on the field together. They do it pretty limited. It's maybe...
Yeah, they've been flexing them out.
Yeah, but it's 15 to 20 reps a game in a 60-play deck. It isn't, Bennett and Gronk throughout the game. They haven't done that. So if for some reason you don't have Gronk against the Niners, having one tight end and playing 11 personnel with 3 wide receivers is actually what they've been doing a lot. You'll just see more of Marty instead of Rob.
They lost a narrow game, decided in the final seconds to a very good football team. It's the second loss of the season, so they're not panicking in any sense right now. And there are a lot of positives even in this game to build on. LeGarrette Blount, 3 touchdowns rushing. The play of Martellus Bennett once again offensively. What else stands out for you guys?
The coach's press conference. You could always tell Bill Belichick after a game if he's quick, if he's surly. They really didn't play that well. I thought he respected Seattle. He knew that was a good game. Reminded me of the Green Bay game for the Super Bowl 49 run before he went to San Diego. So he was proud of his team, thought they fought hard. He just gave them credit. That's a darn good team they lost to.
I still think it's a team that if you play 10 times, Patriots win probably 7 of those. It just looked to me like one of those games where Seattle executed a level offensively. We haven't seen them this year. I mean, they went down to New Orleans and couldn't score, and they came out here to New England and scored quite well. So, I mean, that's an offense that hasn't been putting it together recently. And I think this is a team that situationally, you usually don't see the Patriots make those mistakes. So if you go back, you sort of tune up those situational issues, you win in the red zone like they typically do, it's probably a victory. So I think that's probably why Bill can be sort of even keeled about it and say, you know what, these are all fixable problems. We go and fix them. This team continues to mature over the next half of a season, and all of a sudden we're where we want to be.
They've got Deion Lewis now on the 53-man roster, inactive for the Seahawks game. But I think one of the intriguing possibilities for a lot of people is the potential of putting Lewis and James White in the backfield together at times, that so-called pony formation.
You're excited. You want to call it the pony formation.
You just want pony.
It's like Navy football all over again for
him. Short guys.
I'm excited to see him. I think he's a darn good receiver. He's going to allow you to do some things different that James White can't do.
So the Pats hit the road to San Francisco. When we come back, we'll go around the NFL on Patriots This Week.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam Investments, a proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork. By Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots, and by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Bagster. Dumpster in a bag can take it on.
This week's Putnam Player Spotlight is on Ryan Allen. The 6'2", 220-pound punter is now in his fourth season with the Patriots. The Louisiana Tech graduate has been a terrific special teams weapon. He's allowed the fewest return yards in the NFL this season and forced returners to fair catch 13 balls. Allen has also booted 13 inside the 20. Although Bill Belichick calls it a coincidence, the coach has started every season in New England with a left-footed punter. Yeah. Coincidence. The Putnam Player Spotlight is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
We're back in the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios as Patriots This Week continues. And Guy, what a week 10 in the NFL. A lot of thrillers, including improbable finishes in New Orleans, where the Saints are about to take the lead in the final minutes. The Broncos block the extra point try and score two to win that game. The Steelers in control against the Cowboys final minutes, and Dallas comes back. Ezekiel Elliott running to the score for the Cowboys. But let's stick with the Broncos first in the AFC West, because the Chiefs also had a thrilling comeback against Carolina. That division shaping up right now, in your mind, as the best in the NFL?
I think it's the West. Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. I watched a lot of that Denver game. The good teams play bad the way they did the other day and win games like that. Find a way to win. That was a good win for them. They go to the bye, and that's going to help them down the road.
Well, if you're starting to sort of look at measuring sticks, Seattle had trouble with that same New Orleans team, and Denver went down, and as Zoe said, didn't play great yet was able to still pull it out. It's going to be a competitive division, though, but just watch. Again, we've still got 7 full weeks here of football, right? Potentially. They're going to beat each other up. So the idea that all 3 might be playoff contenders, even, you know, who knows, with San Diego could run the table as well. I think one or two of those are going to start to fall off. Cream will rise at the top.
And they've got head-to-head matchups. Denver and Kansas City still have to play one another twice.
Derek Carr, I think, is up for the MVP with Tom Brady right now. So you look at what the Raiders have done. You look at San Diego. San Diego, I think, is the best last-place team in any division.
That's a good way to put it.
It's like they can't find a way to win.
I still look at the Kansas City Chiefs as a team that just won't go away. You kind of tend to forget about them because they win so ugly. They're not sexy. They're not a team that really scares anyone. But for some reason, they just, with Andy Reid, they tick away these victories.
Meanwhile, you've got Ben Roethlisberger, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They lose the late lead, as mentioned, to the Cowboys, despite his fake spike and a touchdown strike. And also in that game, some strange strategical maneuvering by Mike Tomlin, going for the two-point conversions early and often.
We don't think they're well coached, right? I mean, we were in Pittsburgh. We saw Pittsburgh. They're a talented team. I really think they're going to be there in the end. They'll get their stuff together. Ben did the old Dan Marino play. Fake spike. Take the lead right there. And then you think, boy, this rookie's never, at some point, he's going to give it up. Elliott and Prescott, you don't take Prescott out right here. Well, you don't take him out at all.
Somebody in that division has to step forward. So I think you're right that probably Pittsburgh will be there by default, because since he's sort of fallen away.
Since he'll implode in Baltimore, I don't think he has enough talent.
Yeah, but I start to look at Pittsburgh, and there's too many warts. I mean, and defensively, they're really having some troubles.
Dak Prescott continues to hold down that job. In fact, Tony Romo this week reading a statement, a well-crafted statement, by the way, very articulately describing his feelings, what it's been like for him the first half of the season, and stepping aside, in essence, for Dak Prescott.
Yeah, it's got to be hard. There's a lot of guaranteed money there. It's your team. He's been there forever. That is the Dallas Cowboys. He's the quarterback of America's team. They got a new guy now, and this new guy is playing well. We went through this with Brady Bledsoe, okay? And then what did they do? They stuck with Tom Brady. The rest is history. I don't think they take him out. I really wouldn't touch it. The problem is you got an owner that likes to stick his hands in it. And I don't know if Jerry Jones, if it will tempt him if they lose two games.
I think the thing that's a little more sort of slam dunk in this situation is Tony has a history. It's not just that he had one injury that was unfortunate and he lost a job and the other guy played great. He's got a pretty beat-up body. I think Dak is a safer choice, quite frankly. It seems odd to say that the young guy is safer than the old guy, but practice all week with a guy that's one hit away, that's not a good idea.
Well, the Cowboys, by virtue of their win, remain atop the NFC. When we come back, we'll talk about a team that not long ago was indeed the cream of the National Football Conference, but has fallen on hard times of late. Back with more right after this on Patriots This Week.
now for your Zoe Show. Time to get back in the win column. Let's take a look at San Francisco. A lot of formations. Chip Kelly likes to move guys around. Old friend right here at the top of your screen, Jeremy Curley. Watch a little bow route. Really good route runner. That's like a 23-yard easy pitch and catch right there. A ton of formations, like I said. Here comes the motion. Red zone offense. Tempo. Everything's accelerated. Right here in the flat. Good clear out. Almost a natural pick play. We know how to run those too. So there's one touchdown. Here we go. Trips to the top. Tight end here. He's going to clear out. You forget about him right there. Nice throw. Nice catch. Three catches, two touchdowns. In the passing game, we're going to do some more zone because Cap can run. There's your Zoe Show.
The Zoe Show is brought to you by Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
We're back in the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. Zoe, you and I are headed out to San Francisco for the Patriots and the 49ers. First visit to San Fran for the Pats since 2008. First opportunity for Tom Brady, believe it or not, to play in his hometown.
Yeah, also remember, last year Brady lost the game. They played Chip Kelly and the Eagles immediately after that. Chip had their number. So I'm worried about this game a little bit from the fact that there's some football respect there. But I'm happy for Brady to go home. You always love playing in your hometown. Plus, he got booed last time when the Super Bowl was out there. So he's not going to get booed this time.
There you go. I think this is obviously a week where the focus is back on you, a little less the opponent. Fortunately, you've seen a number of mobile quarterbacks, so that's not going to be sort of new exposure. I think the bigger issue, though, is just simply cleaning up a lot of the mistakes and playing against a team that Coach Belichick will have a lot of material to help you not fall asleep on them. They go into Arizona, and they were like 14-point underdogs and take it right down to the wire against an Arizona team that was starting to get back on track. So you can sort of take that look past them factor off the table.
And since their last meeting in 2012, a 41-34 win for a San Francisco team in the midst of three straight conference championship game appearances, really the one known commodity left from that game is that mobile quarterback, Colin Kaepernick.
And he played really well, Parrott. It was in the rain. It was cold. It was windy. It's amazing how San Francisco has kind of fallen apart here. No Harbaugh, the GM. I mean, this kid had a chance to be really good. He really did. I'm worried a little bit because of the zone coverage we're going to see, a little bit of that. You know, they're going to move the ball around tempo. Communication last week was not good with this defense. So Chip's going to go up tempo and try and catch him sleep.
See, I think the number one thing against guys like this, it won't be much different than last week, except the talent level on offense is a little lower. But it's not zone versus not zone. It's in the zones you have to be physical. In the zones you have to get up and beat people up. That's why you play zone. Seattle plays nothing but zone. Zone works. Just play better zone.
And when the 49ers were here in Foxborough in that aforementioned game, they had maybe the best linebacking core in the NFL. Speaking of Bowman and Willis leading that defense,
tough.
Things have changed now for the 49ers. A lot of different personnel in and out of that lineup. Jim O'Neill's the defensive coordinator, protege of Rex Ryan and Mike Pettine.
This is the number one defense in the NFL that you run against. It really is. If you look out at some of the biggest back games that have happened throughout the course of the season, they come against San Fran. They've really had a trouble stopping people on the ground. I think it might be a big LeGarrette Blount week.
Sub week, too. You go sub against them, get Deion Lewis in the game if he's active and ready to go. James White, they could be big in this game on sub run.
So the Patriots on the natural grass, looking to regain their footing at 7-2, headed to San Francisco. When we come back, Matt and Zoe will tell you how it all unfolds right after this on Patriots This Week.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam Investments. You, your advisor, and Putnam, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
Coming off a loss to the Seahawks, make sure LeGarrette Blount is in your starting lineup against the Niners, as he should run wild against the worst run defense in the NFL. The once-vaunted Vikings defense has struggled in the last four games. While the Cardinals have been inconsistent on offense, keep the Vikes D on your bench. And this week's sleeper is Blake Bortles. While the Jacksonville QB has not been spectacular, over the last 3 weeks, he's put up some good numbers. With a favorable road matchup in Detroit, he won't be thrown to the Lions. This week's fantasy update is brought to you by Verizon. Come home to a better network.
Week 11, second straight game for the Patriots against the NFC West at San Francisco. Matt Chatham, how does it turn out?
Well, I think the Patriots sort of ease back into that 17 to 18 points a game that they give up defensively. Ends up being a 37-17 game with a lot of run game. LeGarrette Blount being your big guy on this day, he's going to get a lot of carries, 25-ish touches.
Zoe?
Tom Brady's going home, like you alluded to. He's going to throw the football. If Rob Gronkowski doesn't make this trip, but if he does, I think you still have to take care of him. I'm going with Martellus Bennett as your game changer. He's going to get about 8 catches. 34-13 Patriots win.
It's the Patriots and the San Francisco 49ers, of course, in week 11 of the NFL season as the Pats look to get back on the winning track. For Matt Chatham and Scott Zolak, I'm Bob Soucy. Thanks so much for joining us on Patriots This Week. We'll talk to you again next week. So long, everyone.